Eternity Delphi Council Debriefings, where the storm has a name. We're your hosts, Jay and Lehman, and today we will be getting back into unhallowed data or data, however you wish to pronounce that word, into the deep dive. But before that, we did get an email, and this email is from Frank. And it says, as always, loving the debriefings, keep them coming. Listening to the archetype episode, so that was the one that just was released this week, and the discussion on starting gear. I wanted to bring up starting vehicles. I don't think I've heard it mentioned in the podcast before, but here is an excerpt from the equipment section in the Storm Knights chapter of the Core Rules. Heroes start with $1,000 in general carried equipment. The character may also have a home vehicle and so on that can be used when in his native realm. Most Storm Knights won't be able to stay home very often, however. A character who takes the wealthy perk starts up with up to $10,000 in gear and a much nicer home vehicle and so on. It's very vague in terms of what you can actually have as a vehicle, but I did want to throw this out there. Additionally, and so on, is even more vague. Of course, the answer to all of this is work with your GM or work with your players. Thanks, Frank. So thank you, Frank, for the email. So yeah, I think maybe the only time I've really talked about vehicles before is with the trademark vehicle perk, and especially in Classic Torg, where I had a Realm Runner. A character, or a player whose character was a Realm Runner, that even when he couldn't use his Grooming Goose, he would find weird things like school buses, and when they were in London, he found a double-decker bus, and, you know, just various whatever kind of fit that thing. And they were always being held together with bungee cords, duct tape, and bubblegum. So that was kind of his little gag, but it got the vehicle for the Storm Knights to go where they needed to go. So with this, they start with 1,000 in general equipment, the home, the vehicle, and so on. So what, and for the wealthy, it's just more and nicer home, vehicle, and so on. So have you ever had a character's home come into play in any games that you've done? That you can think about.
Not in Torg. I have in other games, especially World of Darkness games, mm-hmm. but that's the thing, right? Like, you have a home and you have a vehicle, probably, but that doesn't mean you're going to be using them, even if you're in your home reality.
Right, and there's like, a difference between, like, I'm in London and my character's from London, then I'm from California and we're in West Virginia.
Yeah. Like, just because you're in the same realm doesn't mean you're actually near your home. And then do you want to risk your actual car? I think I brought this up during the archetype discussion, but the equipment that you have is like, when people, like when you have like special ops teams or what have you, they might have like one or two like little extras they have, but most of their gear is provided by the government. They're not bringing they're not driving their Lexus into battle, right? So if it's nearby, yeah, it could be available. Although you do get into like some wiggle room with Core Earth and Pan Pacifica, mm-hmm. where okay, I could have it shipped, you know, I could have things moved around. But then it's also like, it's in your name, you know, so someone could look you up, and then that exposes you to other things. And then what counts as a vehicle, you know, I guess you could have a horse, an isle or something. Mm-hmm. Do you have a tamed stegosaurus in the living land? So it pretty much what Frank says is true, though. It's talk with your GM. Yeah, like, I wouldn't imagine you would want to be using your personal vehicle or mm-hmm. house unless it really comes down to it. It's kind of like in zombie movies. Sometimes you go back to the character's, like, actual home, and they're usually only there for a little while before right. things go away. And that's the other thing, is your house very well may have been transformed. It mm-hmm. might not even be there anymore, and now you're basically just living on an aircraft carrier or something. The other way you could say it is that the Delphi Council maybe gets you a home somewhere and provides you a vehicle to use when you're in your home reality. But again, even outside of this part about your starting equipment, even for the missions, they will often provide you what you need. So if you need a vehicle, the Delphi Council will provide you a vehicle. You don't have to requisition it. You can try to requisition a better vehicle, maybe. But so if you need a vehicle, you've already got one. You don't have to bring your own Ford Taurus into play. But as the trademark vehicle is the exception, though, then you want to use yours.
Right. And that's kind of how I see it. We had one character, Core Earth, in Classic Torg that had a home. He decided it would be in Kentucky, kind of a ranch that had horses and stuff. And it was really close to the Living Land border. And that just became what was that group just called it the ranch. And it became kind of their little main Stormknight hangout that, they would do stuff with and keep stuff. And it was one that I considered my various groups as different TV shows that every once in a while there would be crossover events where
Right.
a player would.
It's like the Chicago
Right,
series.
it was like CSI Vegas and CSI New York and CS, but it was Storm Knights, the Knights of Dunad or they all did knight things, so Knights of the Road, Knights of Dunad, the Knights of the Heart, things like that, and they would then sometimes players would either move group permanently or have a one-off, and then I would say, they're the guest star, at the bottom of the screen. It would say, special guest star, so and so. But that was really the only home, and the only vehicle, again, was the trademark vehicle. But it would be one of those that if somebody, had. They chose either as an archetype or as their background, like the New York police person, and happened to be in New York. Maybe, like you said, it might have transformed, and that could be,
Might be able to get a
something,
squad car.
right? Or you might be able to get a, squad car or, something like that, or have access to, maybe a building or something that you worked with. Hey, I can get into the police department. Oh, the power's still running here. I got the code or I got my badge or whatever that will let me get in. So I could possibly see using stuff like that, but I think it would be kind of weird if everybody, if you had a team that you had a couple of people in the Nile Empire. And everybody's like, okay, we jump into our, little roadster. Every character, jumps into their own roadster and takes off after, whatever. But that would be one that I would, as a game master, unless a character or player really seem to be like, yes, I do want to take my, 2023 Mustang out. I'd be like, okay,
It's not protected by any
you
perks or
might be,
anything.
right? Yeah, okay, you might not have one by the end of this, but if you want to. But I've more often seen where people will acquire one of these, something like you said. I know I had a group that when we were doing, I believe it was Relics of Power Redux, that there is a scene like on the Amazon, and they got a little patrol boat type thing. They had got their own cash and were able to just buy it, and then that became, like the group's boat. And I see that more often where the players and want the characters to have something. They want it for themselves and not just requisitioned. But then they want it so that the whole group can use. And that's where the Electric Samurai with their, motorcycle thing, kind of iconic, kind of always was a little different because, if you're on a motorcycle, yeah, you kind of do want to be the solo, but hopefully everybody else has a vehicle that can do things. Otherwise, you're getting into Nodder territory of
Yeah, or it's like, oh, we're in the jungle.
Right. type thing. So that's I'm glad you pointed that out. Like you said, yes, work with your game master, work with your players. I would let my players, like, if they just wanted to write down, I have a two-story house or split story or a mansion if they had wealthy, in Hollywood. And as just a, if they want to write it down and then we go to those places, then if they want to stop by that instead of a, a normal Delphi Council safe house or something, sure, add a little of that character backstory. It's not going to completely derail the thing, the adventure if you're in the same location, but I would want that kind of beforehand. But other groups, other game masters, other players may completely disagree, and that would be fine. I wouldn't necessarily like a player to just go, "Oh yeah, I have a house down the street," in the middle of an adventure when they haven't ever mentioned that. Just kind of throwing. Again, I know some groups love that stuff. I tend not to, so that's more of a game master slash player slash group choice. But that's how I would handle it. If they have it on their character sheet, if they've mentioned it before, then sure, I could work it into the story. Also, certain things that I've done is people are like, "Hey, how much is a laptop computer?" And I'll say, "Google it." What type do you want? Do you want a little Chromebook, or do you want a two $5,000 gaming, laptop with, all these accessories? That's going to be a you, what your character has, something like that with the wealthy. So on, that's what I would just consider the stuff that, even though it might be in the books, a lot of times I don't care if it's on a character sheet. I don't see Torg Eternity like old school D&D, where what was on your character sheet is what you were doing, because that showed your plans for the future, where you had to have your 10-foot pole and you had to have your little iron spikes to wedge open, and keep doors open from closing and, stuff like that, because that was a different reason of playing, like getting through the dungeon with your own wits and what the equipment was that you brought in was part of the story, because hey, we get to a place, we don't have the equipment, we got to go back. But that was still, it was part of the story, the campaign. It wasn't a mega adventure that you're going through, and if you forget something, oops, now the adventure stops and you don't go forward. So those kind of things can be different. But if somebody's like, "Oh, I look at my watch," I'm like, "Oh, where's your watch on your, your character sheet?" I'm like, most people, have a watch when cell phones first came out. They stopped, and then smartwatches came out, and Fitbits, and Apple Watch, and Samsung watches, and all of that stuff. So now, if somebody wants a watch like that, that's fine if
I
you're
do occasionally catch the
appropriate.
player doing that and be like, oh, that's a contradiction, you know,
Yeah,
because they're
yeah.
like from Oroch or something. It's like,
Right.
oh, I mean,
My sundial. I'll hold it up to the sun and see, check what time it is. But no, that's kind of how I would do things. Like, again, with I let anybody Core Earth or higher have whatever the current cell phone is. I tend to every few years update the world so it's always the near now, and it's not like it was the future, but now it's the past. Like, and
Where's your zunes, guys?
right, and yeah, I don't necessarily do the Guardians of the Galaxy when I only have a tape, and then I have a Zune, and then this other stuff. I let people advance as technology advances, and if Core Earth wants a whatever the latest Apple iPhone is, or one of the new like Motorola flip phones or Samsung, if they want the little folding screens, cool. That's fine. Don't have a problem with that type of that's what I would consider the so on. It would be just those little things that we tend to carry around and would have access to, like what your bug out bag might be, as you know, as things started raining down and invading, you know, invaders crashing in, and you're getting out of your place, and you get wrapped up in the Delphi Council, find out you're a Storm Knight, etc., etc. You've still brought a few things along, and that's kind of what I would see as that. So hopefully that was a little in depth, and thank you, Frank, for that email. And you too can email us at torgdcd@gmail.com, and we will read your email. And this really wasn't a question, just more of a, hey, you guys haven't talked about it, so hey, if we haven't talked about something, you sent it to us, then we'll talk about it, just like we did with Frank's. So yeah. Thank you. And then we can move on to Unhallowed Data. We had left off at the end of scene 4, which then becomes scene 5. So the main thing in scene 3 and 4 that leads into scene 5 is scene 3 was making a rap sheet for yourself so that you did some mischief, you did some bad things to be put into the record, the database. And then you took the Judas Rood and connected it to the server and kind of gave yourself, or the Storm Knights gave themselves, the special envoy status. So scene 5 test run is to check out that special envoy status and see if it's as really as good as you were told and how they think that it was supposed to be. So a quick little thing, you're told you're special agents now, the rest of us, like you do that, and you know church forces are coming, and the little resistance, they kind of like, we're going to have to sneak out, but you guys are the special envoy, so you just walk out that front door and we'll test it right there and see if, you know, if you're noticed as special envoys and see if you can just walk out. So did you have anything for the first part? We'll do the unsafe house later, but that first part, where they're told, hey, just see what happens.
Well, you mean in scene 5?
Scene 5, yes. Like they're told to right, walk yeah. out, and oh, sorry. Then they're also said, hey, there's this resistance cell that's been missing.
Yeah, okay.
go find that out also. You can talk to different people. Hey, you could probably even talk to the church now with your special envoy status.
Yeah, so my group, which I put some things up so we could see, we had an Eilish dwarf dragon warrior. We had the elf converted pagan, neo-pagan, transformed to cyber papacy white witch. We had a Pan Pacifica gun runner and a cyber papacy drone operator.
Oh, okay.
Who was originally in the church police but defected.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they get out without any big issues. And in fact, because they do have a member of the church, ex-church police, he knows how to talk to them and everything. Even though this is, again, a group of not exactly the most charismatic individuals, except for the Gunrunner. And this was before the Pan Pacifica book came out. And, like, ironically, that came out with so many perks that would have been amazing for this character, Kato Sato. But basically, they have to go find the cell. And so the cells are decentralized. They don't really know where they are. They just know there's a dead drop and there's a password that you can use and things like that. So moving in, this is when the Pan Pacifica character goes to start talking to people to find out what we can find. And that's when both a wanted card and a what's the other one called? Oh God, you know, the height, not heightened paranoia, was it heightened paranoia? The one that makes all social tests much harder.
Right.
So it was basically set up so now the charismatic person couldn't actually talk to anybody because they were wanted and would trigger something. And they could talk their way out with special envoy status, but it would still cause a problem. So they had to find one of the less talkative people, and I think it was the dwarf, was going to go talk to people. But then because of the heightened paranoia, that made it harder, and he failed. And then in the actual adventure, it says if you do fail the first time, it makes everything harder again. Right? So they had a hell of a time to try to find any of this. And this was sort of the also the beginning of my group always loving to play Cosm cards down in ways that screw each other over. It gets them a lot of possibilities too, and it was right. funny. Eventually the Pan Pacifica character relented and started to talk to people. There is a thing where there's only one guy in the restaurant that you're supposed to go to, and he doesn't know the password. So they were trying to be all subtle, give the password. He's like, what are you doing? That was pretty funny. But they eventually tracked it down and found some info. I think they actually used a drone, a scout drone, to scout around and find signs of like what had happened. And it's not really mentioned in this part, but in later, it's mentioned like, things that have happened to the window. So I was like, oh, you could see that from the outside with the scout drone. So they kind of narrowed it down that way.
Right. And again, this is definitely one of the adventures, mega adventures that I highly recommend even for myself to read beforehand. Again, I have the bad habit of, you know, blabbing out that you should always read the adventures, but then in real life I tend to just do it on the fly. This is one that you will have times where information will be ahead of where you might might need it. So yeah, I like the finding out about like what happened with the cell, because they do give you various ways to do it. So it's definitely not the you have to go to these one people and talk with them, and then they, you know, if you roll good enough, they'll give you directions. They give you a few choices. You know, you can knock on doors, you can try, you know, talking with people, and they even kind of give you an out. They talk about, you know, if just nothing works at all, then there's an inspector that might come to the party early. We'll talk about him later, but there are a lot of kind of backup things here. And
yeah,
it's short, but I really appreciated that they gave different ways to finding the information. So basically you're looking for this cell. This resistance cell who's went dead. The cells in Cyberpapacy work very similar to cells in Pan Pacifica, where they don't always know each other. They just do drop points and things. Pan Pacifica, it's because you're going to have a traitor, so the smaller your cell is, and a lot of lone people can work together by not actually being part of the same group. In the Cyberpapacy, it's different because you don't want a cell to be taken over, and with everybody keeping data on, you know, in encoded or even encoded, they're keeping it in a digital form. That form, you know, could be downloaded, decrypted, and a lot of things would be found out. So they kind of have compartmentalized the information. But there's a cell that's gone missing. The first part of the scene is figuring out where that cell is, and you find out that they were located in a so-called safe house that proves to be an unsafe house.
Right.
And then it's like some apartments. They go up into the apartments. And this is like it's not very subtle at all. It even says it inside. The scene isn't subtle. Basically, the four members of the cell have been clawed to shreds. And you kind of give your first, or you have your ability as a game master to give your first red herring, talking about it being, you know, something like a Cygoyle.
I like that part where they mention a Cygoyle, because...
Yeah. Just getting expectations out there that the Storm Knights would logically think about, but then kind of flipping it later when the reveal happens. So they find the cell members, and they then you can use various things like computers, evidence analysis, and science. So they give you various skills to use, and you can figure out that this cell was trying to nod into Tharkold's Kerr, which is kind of cool. It sets the first that I can recall.
Yeah, it's a precedent. I guess.
Yeah, it kind of sets the precedence that in some way Kerr and Godnet can be linked, and you can go from one to the other. So that kind of gives that information for the first time, which is kind of cool anytime. Because a lot of these things in the books, they give you like two things, and you're like, these two things are cool, but how do they combine? You know, and it's one of those things, as an author, I always like trying to think about beforehand. Or like in we were talking about Pan Pacifica and the Xeno Gospog, with all the gene mods out that came out, I was like, somebody is going to ask what happens when somebody with gene mods is transformed into a Xeno Gospog. So it was like, let me answer that question, you know, for you, and a little bit of the data sheets that were included in that. I think it was in Operation Soft Cell, as just a here's a little thing that is put in as a little Easter egg, but answers a question. So this here answers the question. These nodders were able to access Tharkold's Kerr, and then they found some interesting stuff happening at the Abbey of St. Genevieve. So then it's up to the Storm Knights to go to the St. Genevieve Abbey and find out what weird things the monks were doing there.
I think technically it was the monks that were nodding into Kerr, and these guys had hacked into
the abbey
and were doing a ride along somehow.
Oh. Right. Or tracking ride along, yeah, type thing. Okay, yeah, that, so anyway, there was nodding that occurred to get cyber people into, like, cyberpapal reality into Kerr. And this cell found out about it. The evidence looks like Cygoyles have attacked, which logically could be, hey, they were breaking into this Abbey stuff, so Cygoyles were sent for them. But then the Storm Knights then probably will end up going to St. Genevieve Abbey. Which formerly was a school, and technically it was an abbey hundreds of years before. So it was like an abbey became a school, then went back to being an abbey. I thought this was neat because the walls around it are like 4 meters tall. They have cameras. There's loud ringing sounds, so the Storm Knights are coming in. Alarms have already been triggered. And then it's sort of like, how do the Storm Knights proceed? You know, do they just try to jump over the wall, go through the wall? Do they, you know, how do they get in? Are they brash about it? Are they trying to sneak in? You know, that I think can set some different tones of the game depending on how your Storm Knights react to this. Okay, we got there. Oh, wait, it's surrounded by a big wall. There's alarms going off, and there's cameras everywhere. So what are we as Storm Knights going to do? And we also have Special Envoy status, so what are we going to do as Storm Knights? So do you remember or have any thoughts on just the perimeter, the wall,
Well, they just now I think it's kind of funny. Like I like the fact that they set this up to have all this security and the cameras and everything, but like it doesn't matter at all because everyone who would have been watching is dead, right? So the play like the Storm Knights could just walk in and it would be exactly the same as if they took all this sneaky extra, all this precautions and everything. So no matter what, like they could just have walked in. But my group basically just sent a scout drone over
Oh, you have the
and saw
drone.
bodies and they were like, well, shit's been going on, and they just basically ran in. Like they knew the jig was up, something was happening, so they just went in.
Yeah, I believe when I game mastered the group that I was running, they had a couple of sneaky people that sneaked over the wall and then were just like, "Oh no, guys, get over here." type thing. But I tend to like things that set up scenes and then they kind of change them so that
Yeah,
it's
there's
not
a little.
necessarily obvious what it is. Okay, this is what we're gonna do. Kind of throw off that normalcy of, every other time.
Subverting expectations can be good when you do it, within reason.
Right.
Right?
Yeah,
You
so
don't want to do it too much.
I liked this version of it. As you said, once they get into the abbey properly, they see bloody corpses of the monks littering the ground. One of the things that we talked about before we started the recording was that the monks have had their like lower jaw and tongue removed and kind of a cybernetic piece of metal, a chin there, so they can't talk. It says they have a metallic false lower jaw installed, one incapable of uttering sounds because they have taken the vow of silence to a pretty far extreme. So that's one of the things. There's one monk in the courtyard still lives, but he kind of just like points because he can't talk. And then, the Storm Knights kind of go in that direction. I did find it funny when you said that your group didn't have anybody that could read minds because that could have been a little,
Yeah,
simple.
it's like the one time my group didn't tap someone with read minds.
Because normally that can be a game changer. But then I came back with would the monk see telepathical communication as breaking vow of silence, or would they still not want to
Well,
talk
that would be
back?
telepathy.
Well,
Read
telepathy,
mind,
right.
you have
It's,
no.
right. So depending on what happens and how you as a game master take that, it could be an easy way or still a little more difficult way. But they go into the abbey. Sorry about that. And this is where the kind of the twist on what they
It's a
possibly,
twist.
well, they possibly thought it was Cygoyles. So they find out that it is actual Tharkalldu that have
Right.
invaded the abbey and have killed off all of the monks except for the one. I think my first group did think that they were Cygoyles that had done it and were shocked. And then when I was a player, they were not shocked at all.
My group was not shocked. They figured it out from they got pretty good on the investigation, so and they were like, into Kerr, huh? And then they were ripped apart by something big.
Right, with claws. Huh. So yes, depending on how well your party takes clues, and as a game master, if you're able to kind of stress the Cygoyle angle, or if your players really picked up on the Tharkold angle, it might be a surprise. It might not be a surprise, but there are three demons. One of them is actually, I believe, are they all three techno demons at this point?
The one
is
Bamal is from
Cyberpapacy,
Cyberpapacy.
yes. So one is a demon from the Cyberpapacy. The other two are actually Tharkold Dhu demons. The Cyberpapal demon is subordinate to the
I mean,
the
even
big.
The Cyberpapal one has occult tech, so...
Right, so it was basically a demon who then was taken, you know, by... put into the dominance chain of a Tharkold Dhu and then pretty much made a Tharkold Dhu.
I guess
one.
He probably transformed or something.
Something. But I find that, and this is a... what do I want to say? A breadcrumb to kind of the adventure. You have a demon
right.
from the Cyberpapacy who has occult tech. I want to say there are also two ghouls per Storm Knight. So a fight occurs. The one that I game mastered, this fight did kill one Storm Knight, but it was he played the martyr card, so
okay.
That. But I want to say for that group, this was a little bit of a harder fight. This might have they were. This is meant for beta, but I had like 7 or 8 alpha, and I found that many alpha can equal
right.
a 4-party beta group. So I didn't lower. Anything. So the fight was a little harsher because they were, you know, alpha, but they had 7 or 8. They lost somebody, but it was the player's choice to use martyr card. But it was I remember that being a really fun battle because you're in Cyberpapacy, you're fighting a demon and two techno demons, and some people are really trying to figure it out, and the other ones are not caring. They just want to take them out. What also I find nice about this is there are 3 named demons, and they all have slightly different powers and abilities and strengths and stuff like that. So it's not just the Tharkold Staplot 3 times.
Right. Like, I think Yillit would have been a techno demon sub
right.
if the Tharkold book had been out yet.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I think that was cool. Plus, there is the ghouls that can add to it. Since I don't recall very much about the fight when we were with our very advanced beta characters who every player had played Torg Eternity for a long time by this point. So knew all the tricks and, you know, card fishing and deck stacking and all, you know, all of that metagaming stuff. We went through it without any problem whatsoever. But this was something I think was cool because it had Tharkold Dhu in an abbey. It kind of brings the two high tech, high, you know, cybernetics type thing, whether it's cyberware or occult tech, you have that kind of you show both of those sides,
mm-hmm.
which I think is pretty cool,
which is an important concept for the next act
right
too.
Right
yeah.
and it leads into so then as they look at everything after the techno demons are dispatched, they have time
yeah.
to look into the library, hack into it, figure out what's going on. And the thing that they find is that this abbey was doing a lot of research into magic, which is heretical. So that's like a red flag of a wait.
Specifically on
yeah,
demons.
On demons. You know, it's like, oh, wait. The church is trying to find information on demons. This is the, you know, the abbey that was nodding into Kerr. Well, you know, what all is going here? So it says that they might have means to interrogating survivor monks without speech.
Like telepathy.
again, I would leave that up to the game master. If the monk is relieved to be able to give that information, or if they would consider that also as a how would they consider silence? Is silence just sound
waves? Well, it
says
vow of suppression, so they're not even going to communicate
oh,
at all. So
right,
they
so,
wouldn't use telepathy, but you could still mind read them.
Right. So there's kind of a neat little way of looking at that. They say that evidence analysis can uncover the same information. They have a card catalog.
Yeah, I love that. I have a card catalog.
It's like, how does this thing work? You know, the core Earth person, you know, depending on the character's age, you'd be like, I don't know either. And look for the Aurora character to come out and break the code of the card catalog, which I think is pretty funny. But they show that several volumes on demonology were checked out to five different monks who are not there amongst the victims. And the records in the supply room have receipts for five tickets via the Cybertrain to Montbard. Once they've uncovered that link, or if they are stuck, then we skip ahead to scene 7, which is meeting the Inspector Destine.
I will say there's a couple of things for this scene with my group. One was we got into a big discussion of if these guys all have their jaws removed and a cybernetic plating covering it all, right? So they can't talk. How did these ghoul tongues get in?
Right. They got ripped off and shoved in or something.
That's what I basically said, is all the techno demons ripped them out as a talk now, ape, kind of a thing. And for my group, the fight was not very difficult because that is where we learned the power of the violence hex for the White Witch spells. Now, it does require casting it on someone who has done a violent act already. Mm-hmm. So usually you have to soak up one attack first. But the fight literally starts with the main techno demon killing the monk in his hand. And
right.
So I was like, yeah, okay, he just did a violent act. And, you know, so they spent the possibilities on that, got an outstanding, and it halved his damage for the fight. And that's... halving is serious. Like, there's a couple of times where damage gets halved in this game, mm-hmm. and it is always a huge, huge deal.
Yeah.
And I believe the Dragon Warrior just, like, smoked the ghouls pretty easily. And then the Techno Demon... the main techno demon couldn't really do damage to anybody, so they just ignored him. He tried to intimidate, but that was about it. So yeah, the actual fight wasn't too bad, but it was that violence hex who really did some work.
After that, however, your party gets through that, figures out the information or doesn't, they will meet Inspector Destine. So this Inspector Giles Destine, it says, was a hard-nosed police detective in Paris before the invasion, and after his transformation, he remains much the same, but with implants to make him even more effective at his job. He is principled, calculating, methodical, and most of all, persistent. He never abandons a case once he begins investigating. I want to say... the inspector for me in both of when I game mastered this and when I went through it as a player, I love this NPC. This NPC is somebody who is definitely on the cyber papacy side, has fallen for all of their propaganda type stuff, but he is still very principled. And he still has a this is right and this is wrong, and not necessarily a maniacal, mustache-twirling villain of the Nile.
He's not a fanatic.
He's not a fanatic. He's not a, oh, look, they're Storm Knights. I'm going to kill them. He's a, you have this special envoy status. You're a, you know, and then he, in my group, it was like a monster hunter, a... TikTok influencer, you know, what special envoys, you know, so he accepts them with skepticism.
Yeah.
which I think is pretty cool, but he doesn't just outright go, oh, you know, I figured out that, you know, you have the status wrong. He's like, you have the status. He thinks it's church given, but he's not then just, I'm going to roll over and, you know, let you do. He's a, I'm going to try to figure out what's really going on here in his own way. And basically, he can have a very cordial, amicable talk with the Storm Knights. And that's how, in both of the groups, the one that I ran and the one that I played in, always very cordial with him. There was one of the times where they knew he was, you know, he's on the other side and not a let's fight him immediately. It was a we'll talk to him. I will say that my home group, they shocked me and they just told him everything. Every time he showed up, they were 100% truthful, did not hide anything at all from him, because by the time, and he's a reoccurring NPC, every time he shows up, they've already done what needed to be done. So it's not right. Like them telling him is going to have stopped them from doing what they did. And they understood that things can work slow in the cyber papacy through all the techno bureaucracy that we talked about in last episode, as well as any time we talk about the cyber papacy. And they were like, we should, if we tell him where we're going to go, he'll probably show up later or get permission to travel later. So we'll go, we'll do it, and then we'll be 100% up front with him, tell him everything that, you know, that went on. And by doing that, they earned his respect.
Yeah, because it's almost impossible to lie to him.
Yes, he has a nice special ability, the Eye of Truth, which is fooling him on any lie is near impossible, which is a difficulty number of 20 that has to be a charisma plus willpower. So instead of, you know, using your spirit or your mind, you're using charisma. Oh,
really? Here it just says a persuasion test on my copy.
Oh, I'm holding the book.
Oh, so okay. I have the PDF.
Ah, okay. I could look at the PDF.
They change that.
Yeah, let's check this out. Scene 7.
Oh wait, actually, yeah, no, never mind. You're right.
Okay.
In his stats, it's charisma plus any adds and willpower. But in the adventure, up at the top, it says it's a DN20 persuasion test.
Ah, yes. Okay. So yeah. So two things. Something messed up on page 21 in the adventure background. It says Storm Knights can tell them anything they choose, but if they tell an overt lie, to make a near impossible persuasion test to avoid his lie detecting cyberware. In his actual stats, and this is what I would highly recommend using, it's the same near impossible, but it is charisma plus willpower. So we all know charisma is a dump stat. So do this and see what happens with that plus the willpower. I mean, persuasion would be two, but then you're either going to have the face who probably does have persuasion, or somebody with willpower that's going for resistance to other things. You would need kind of both of those. So that's what I personally would use the special ability in his stat block and not what it talks about in the adventure. But again, if you don't read ahead, like I probably didn't, and I probably used what was there and not what was in his stat block. But either way, near impossible, 20, he's hard to fool. The other group probably told him 80 to 85% truth, and then would tack in one little lie into it. And since I'm not the game master, I don't know how successful we really were in each of those. It wasn't you convinced him or didn't convince him, because it's not like he goes, oh, you lie, and then, you know, immediately calls in church police to attack. He's like, okay, you lied to me, I know it, and he stores that information for later And that's also why I think this character is really, to me, he's a very nice character that can get that Game Master. You can use this character in not just this adventure, but you could carry him into other places as a contact, especially if they get on his good side. You know, he might look at them as, okay, you are kind of Storm Knights, but you're been good with me and are kind of doing good stuff that I view, so you have that special envoy. I'm not gonna necessarily mess with it, but it does have he's very principled, and that. So did you have anything to add about the inspector?
My players also strangely did not attack him and basically would give him a full debriefing every time. But I did run this a little bit differently because what happened in my game, the group comes out and there's a whole bunch of church police. And because of the wanted on the one character, they're like, hey, we know that that person's wanted. And then they wanted to use their special envoy status. But I'm like sitting there thinking, okay, this special envoy status is secret, right? But how do you use it if it's secret? If you show it to someone and they don't know what it is, like, what are they? Okay, buddy. So they were trying to convince these just regular Joe Blow church police. There was no, like, priest with them or anything, that they were special envoy. And they were like, you know, well, we'll find that out when we take you in. So you're coming with us. And then the inspector showed up. And he knew what the special envoy was, so he kind of let them go, which made them have a more positive reaction to him.
Right, right.
And then, yeah, they basically, and because they were still under the -4 penalty from heightened paranoia, and I think an additional -2 from messing up earlier, they decided it best not to lie, so they told him basically everything. And they were, if memory serves, they were very, like, uppity about it, too. Like, those priests were researching demons.
Yes, and, yes.
They're like, is this what the cyber papacy is about? And he was just like, that is not my concern. You know, that sort of stuff. Made him very, like, cold about the whole thing, but obviously not, like, you know, screaming psalms at them or anything like that. Like, every other sort of cyber church person had been portrayed thus far. So they were more or less, they're like, okay, we'll just leave this guy alone. So later on when he reappears, it was also fairly cordial the whole time.
Yeah. You brought up the whole, these were, you know, priests doing heretical magic and, you know, messing with demons. I want to say, my group, specifically the Cyber Witch, was the one who was, you know, saying, oh no, how bad could, you know, this be when, you know, you got your monks doing all of this nasty magic stuff, you know, and there's a Cyber Witch, so that was...
Yeah, so I had the White Witch basically do the same thing, and he was like, well, you know, sometimes there are people with special status that are allowed to do different things. Nice. It's like, do you think that that's fair, right? So they're like, okay.
But no, I just think the main thing, Game Master, is you can really use this character in ways that in a lot of the games they don't necessarily have, or a lot of the adventures they don't have. This character, who I don't even want to say is like a shade of gray, because they are very much themselves, you know, and they have their viewpoints and stuff, but it's not just a immediately need to scuffle because they're on the other side. And I think that is really, really nice. So basically they found out that there is these books have been checked out of the library. The stuff is going to Mont Bond, and so they take a cyber train to Mont Bond, which would then lead to Act 2, Alone in the Dark. So we will get into that the next time we pick up? Did you have
I
any?
would, yeah, I would like to
Yes.
mention that I think this part is actually one of the parts that lost my players a bit in it. And if you're running this adventure, I think you need to do a little bit more work in linking Act One and Act Two, because if you look at it, the Storm Knight's mission was to go in and get this special envoy status and see if it worked. And they have now proven that, but now they've learned something and they're just straight up going there without even going back and reporting to the Delphi Council that their special envoy status works. Like, there might be something else that needs to be done, right? So this adventure, out of many, out of all the mega adventures, and I haven't done God Box, so I can't use it, but there was a point after a few acts where my players were like, "What are we doing again? Like, what's the ov like? What are we actually trying to do
Yeah,
here? We're just kind of going from place to place." So I think you kind of need to maybe add something between these two acts where you get some closure on Act One, and then the Delphi Council is like, "Look, we had plans for you to do with this, but whatever you've found is important, and we're going to divert resources for you to go investigate it. And also make sure that the special envoy status is ongoing." So just, yeah, try every once in a while, do a, "You guys remember what we're doing, right? Okay." You know, because sometimes in Torg, because it's so scene, it's like scene, 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 act done. Scene, scene. Sometimes it can kind of feel like just running the treadmill, and you want to kind of remind the players what they're doing, and then also give them options for how they want to do it that might not necessarily be exactly the scenes. So having a little bit in between, it's like, okay, it assumes you just take a cyber train up, but is there anything else you guys want to do before you leave this place, et cetera.
No, I would agree. Blood on the Blasted Lands had a part also where it's like, here's your mission, and they get the mission, but the adventure assumes that they like divert without
Yeah.
taking that information back. And so having some way that they can close up that loophole, or you know, that hole, is good. So in this one, I think in both of them, before we got onto the train, we contact like well, the one group contacted the Delphi Council. In my home game, I have a different organization, but they were able to contact that organization, and they have a little more self-destiny control.
Autonomy.
Yeah, they have a more of that, so. You might need to do that, because you might have players that go, okay, they're supposed to do that. We told the inspector he's going to take care of that,
Right.
so we're just going to go back. And then
And
you're.
depending on their investigations, if they only got standard successes, they might not know everything as well.
So that might be a thing. And as I've mentioned, when if you get to if your party gets to a point where they're like, we think it's done, there's nothing really that says that you have to do everything behind it. Now, those, I would highly suggest you read through it and figure out all the bad things, or you know, the ramifications and repercussions that may happen by that, but nothing, and unless you've gone, we are going through this. If you're at a point where you're we're going through unhallowed data, start to finish. That is our goal in this amount of time, and no diversions. And that's kind of an outside of the game thing. Nothing says that you have to keep, you know, going as you saw. But I think if the Delphi Council, no matter what they wanted you, they'd be like, okay, one, special envoy seems to work. Two,
Right.
Tharkoldu and the cyber papacy, heretical magic, cyber papacy studying demons, that doesn't sound good for Core Earth at all.
Right.
And you know, would say you Storm Knights can continue this since you're the ones in the cyber papacy with the special envoy status. Go ahead, and you know, this your new mission is to figure this thing out. So I think that's a good point to have made. So we'll go ahead and wrap this episode up here. Again, you can email us like Frank did at torgdcd@gmail.com. But until then, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmiverse. Bye.